Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. Dr. Jerry Bergman, you guys have heard him on this show a number of times from back in Ohio. 30 years ago, I began reading creation material, and my shelf, my bookshelf of creation books, we need to empty that whole shelf because we got to replace all the books with Dr. Bergman's books. He's got more books coming out. He has authored 35 books and over 900 articles, papers, peer-reviewed journal papers. He teaches at Northwest State College in Archbold, Ohio. And on May 9th, he was here in Denver to speak to our Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. And what an honor to have back in studio Dr. Jerry Bergman. Jerry, welcome back.
It's great to be here.
Thank you. Jerry, your talk to our creation group was on Darwinism, the universal asset. And you covered some just devastating examples of the influence.
Right.
Could we start with the Tasmanians?
Okay, a preface. The damage that Darwinism has done, and Darwin himself, because of his writings, has been enormous. And what I tried to do in a number of my writings, as well as that presentation, was document that. And one of the more interesting cases is the Tasmanians, which was a group of people who lived in Tasmania. That's why they're called Tasmanians. And they were probably Polynesian, mostly a racial traits, not dark black, but light brown, had Tasmanian facial features. They were regarded by many evolutionists as the missing link. They look primitive. They look, culture was very primitive, but they also had features that, well, look a little bit slightly ape-like. Mm. And so they thought, well, here's the missing link. Here is indeed proof of evolution. And they basically, and now there's other factors as well, there always is, but of course, part of it was the farmers wanted the land that they had. Mm-hmm. And so basically, in time, they slaughtered the entire population of Tasmanians. And one of the more interesting events was toward the end when they realized they weren't going to survive, there were several Tasmanians who requested, this is after the conflicts were over and they finally since ruled the British colonists there, and they basically said, you know, we can't go around slaughtering these people like we have been. Actually, a Methodist minister intervened and said, these are God's children. We're all descendants of Adam and Eve, and you cannot treat them like you are. This is wrong. It's murder. And to justify it on the basis of evolution is wrong. So they think he put a guilt trip on them, and they finally decided, okay, then we'll let them go to the small land. They went to a small, an island, basically, the ones that were left at this time.
The Tasmanians. I wonder what percentage of the population had been destroyed by then.
Well, then we don't have exactly statistics on the number, but I would say 15,000-20,000. It was a fairly large population. Mm. So anyways, towards the end, when there was only a few Tasmanians left, one realized that what they did with the Tasmanians, and some were forced to do this, was when they died to strip their bones of flesh, to clean the bones and send them back to England to be studied.
The home of Charles Darwin.
Right. And put them in museums as proof of evolution. Mm. So he realized this was going to happen, and he basically said, please do not let this happen. Bury me. Give me a respectful burial. And so they said, okay, we will. So when he died, his body was in the hospital, and the British broke in the hospital, cut his body apart, threw the parts out the window. Mm-hmm. They were retrieved by accomplices to this act.
To this crime.
And then they again, denuded the bodies, shipped them back, the bones back to England, and they were displayed in one of the museums in England. Now, not too long ago, when they, of course, realized what they had done, the bones were sent back to Tasmania, and they were given proper burials. If you read the whole account of the story, which I document some of this in my book briefly, but there are more fuller accounts. In fact, there are two large books written about the Tasmanians. One is called The Last of the Tasmanians, and it goes into detail showing exactly what happened to these people as a result of their belief in Darwinism.
Now, the evolutionists tuning into this show, by accident, they're driving through Denver and just flipping through the AM dial, 50,000 watts. We get into seven neighboring states, and they're hearing that you teach the sciences in Ohio. Which areas do you teach? I know astronomy, geology.
My primary interest is in the life sciences, biology, anatomy, physiology, microbiology, and so on.
And how long have you been teaching for? 30?
I've been there at this college where I'm at now, Northwest 35. State, for about almost 30 years. But I also taught 7 years at Bowling Green State University and 6 years at the University of Toledo.
So somebody listening who's a Darwinist is undoubtedly immediately offended. How dare you suggest that anyone would exterminate a whole people group based on Darwin's theory and Darwin's writings? How do you defend that?
Well, it's well documented in history, and this we're not talking about something that happened 1,000 years ago. The last Tasmanian died at the end of the last century, the century before last, the 1800s. And so we had photographs of these people. It's been well documented. Mm-hmm. There are two volumes, one called The Last Tasmanian, and there's several other volumes, which again go into detail. So there's no question what happened. There's no question as to why this is.
Well, and there's no question that this is traced directly to Charles Darwin himself. In fact, thank you for being on the show with us on May 9th before you spoke to our creation group that night. But we talked about your book, Hitler and the Nazi Darwinian Worldview. Fabulous book. So well documented. And I think one of your better sellers. This is such a powerful topic.
Yeah, it's done very well. And there's a lot of interest, of course, in Hitler now.
Yeah, of course. And to tie in Hitler with the bigger picture, what worldview drove the Nazi machine? And so your book does a wonderful job in documenting that. But you quote directly from Charles Darwin, and I'd like to read this from your book, and you're quoting his second book, The Descent of Man. And in The Descent of Man, on page 201 of the edition that you're referencing.
First edition.
Charles Darwin wrote this, that by applying his theory, quote, the civilized races of man will almost certainly exterminate and replace throughout the world the savage races.
Right.
So the civilized races, by that he meant his race.
Right.
White Europeans,
right.
Yeah. And so he believed that blacks and aborigines and others were closer to apes than he was.
Right.
And so he said that the civilized races, and he gives a time frame within maybe a couple hundred years or so, mm-hmm. will almost certainly exterminate the savage races.
In other sources, he said will exterminate. This will happen. So he was very confident that it would happen because, well, these races are inferior.
Yeah, and at one point he's talking about breeding humans, and he really is broaching the topic of eugenics. And he says, you know, with our animals, we let the weak ones die. Mm-hmm. But if we did that with human beings, we'd be considered immoral.
Yeah.
So he said, and I think he had tongue firmly planted in mm-hmm. cheek. So he said, I really don't want to address that. That wouldn't be proper.
Right.
But what fool would breed his animals the way we breed human beings?
Yeah, that's true.
So you could read between the lines.
Oh yeah, he made it very clear. In fact, his 1871 book, The Descent of Man, has been called a racist book from cover to cover. And it indeed is a goldmine of information relative to racism. Now, he himself, of course, didn't kill anybody or didn't injure anyone, as far as we know. But his book was read by people throughout the world, and, of course, they took him for what he said. And it was translated in German. The first translation was in German. And the translator kind of had free liberty to add a few things. Well, he took free liberty to mm-hmm. add a few things. And, of course, then this book heavily influenced the German society, as well as Adolf Hitler and the other
especially
individuals.
The elites in science.
And
in education, academics.
Right.
And so they were just immersed in a Darwinian worldview, which your book documents so well. So the Tasmanians were exterminated. Now, there are some who married outside of the Tasmanian ethnicity, and so there is some surviving Tasmanian influence, but as a people group, they were exterminated.
We're gone, yeah.
Right?
Some people can say their great-great-grandfather was a Tasmanian. And this is interesting because if they're a different species that were supposedly inferior, they didn't seem to have any trouble reproducing. Now, not a lot, of course, mixed, but there were some that did reproduce with married Tasmanian women.
Now, in Australia, and I know that CMI, you've published a lot with Creation Ministries International, mm-hmm. they've recently looked into and they've reported on the findings of secular researchers who have shown the cruelty to the Aboriginal people, the native peoples of Australia, by the British Empire and public policy that was just viciously cruel to Native Australians. And that's been increasingly widely recognized, and they attribute it to a Darwinian mindset of survival of the fittest, and these people are closer to apes, and so it's really not wrong to treat them more like you would treat animals.
That's exactly what they believe, and of course you can see how that would motivate people to do the awful things, the atrocities that were committed.
Mm. So in that part of the world, Darwinism, the universal acid, why do you use that term?
Well, because, number one, that term is not original with me. Daniel Dennett used that term, that expression, in one of his books. And, of course, he felt it would be a good thing because Darwinism can eliminate what he thought was a negative influence in society, namely Christianity. Mm. And so he used that in a positive way. Mm. And I, of course, am using that in the opposite way. And not just the Tasmanians, but I have, in fact, several volumes, which I'm working on, which documents many, many areas of society. This Darwinian worldview, especially survival of the fittest idea, had an adverse, strongly adverse influence.
Well, Darwin's original title of Origin of Species had to do with the survival of the favored races.
Right.
And then he himself added to the cover, the title page, survival of the fittest. So these ideas, they only need to be implemented then to bring about what he wrote that was inexorable, that we civilized races would exterminate the blacks and the Jews and the Tasmanians and the Aborigines and so on.
Yeah. When he met some of these people during his 5-year trip around the world, he said it's hard to believe these people are human. So he had very, very negative things to say about the people he met, the natives that he met in South America and other places.
On page 156 of The Descent of Man, at least this edition here, he talked about the gap between humans and animals, humans and non-humans. And he compared it to the gap between Negroes and the gorilla.
Right.
And do you recall that quote?
Yeah. And when you eliminate the races in between humans and apes, then the gap between humans and apes will be greater. And specifically, he's referring to the Negroes in that particular part.
Yeah. So the racism of Charles Darwin, and people like to say, well, you have to view it in his day and age. When I see Americans in our history who lynched blacks, I don't say, well, you have to understand them in their context.
Right.
No, God said it's a capital crime to kidnap an innocent person. It's a capital crime to kill an innocent person. It's a crime to steal someone's property.
Right.
You judge them not in the context of their day, but in the context of morality. That's how you judge people.
Right. Many of his views, though, went beyond what many people at that time believed relative to racism and race inferiority. So, and here's a prominent individual, one of the most well-known scientists in the world, and one who is highly respected. Certainly someone in that category should not be saying the things that he was saying.
Hmm.
And yeah, it's true. We lived in a racist society back then. The people back then did. But on the other hand, that doesn't justify what he said. Hmm. And again, he gave the era of scientific authority. People were racist back
right.
then, and people are today. But on the other hand, when they justify this by science, by truth, that puts it in a whole different category.
That gives a veneer of respectability to now academics, professors, biologists, and cosmologists, who that they feel that their racism is justified by the laws of physics and biology.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, you had to make an argument based on emotion or maybe religion. Mm-hmm. Or vengeance. In Europe, they would say the Jews killed Jesus. And
yeah.
so they'd have this hatred. There was plenty of anti-Semitism long before Adolf Hitler.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
yeah. Even Martin Luther wrote a book called On the Jews and Their Lies. I don't know if you've read that.
Oh,
it's a horrific, horrific read.
My book on Darwin and the Hitler and the Darwinian worldview, I have a whole section on that, and I go into detail about that. Luther was a very... He had very strong ideas, and he was even worse relative to the Catholic Church, the Pope, and some others, Protestants. So he had strong words. Now, of course, he was older at that time, and I cover that in my book.
I don't excuse it. In fact, in my life's work, The Plot, an overview of the Bible in chapter 11, I quote excerpts from that book.
Yeah.
And I brought a native German up to see you in Boulder to their library. They have Kritische Gesundheitsgabe in the original German. And I had him translate for me because I could not believe the vicious things said that we should kill them. We shouldn't allow them to use our streets. We should take all their money. We should set up camps for the Jews, all from Martin Luther.
Yeah.
And, you know, after he wrote that book, and I'm not anti-Lutheran. I'm close to Lutheran and everything else. But after he wrote that book, he wrote some of his most important commentaries, like on Psalms and other books. So I think it was deep-seated in Europe that Christians hated the Jews for centuries.
Yeah, and that's right. That's a big problem.
But Darwin did something different for the Nazis. He gave them a biological justification for their hatred.
Right.
That's the veneer of respectability that Charles Darwin said, hey, this is science. These people are inferior. They're almost like apes.
And it wasn't just the Jews. People aren't aware of this generally, but Hitler had, or his regime, ended up killing more Christians than Jews. But the estimate is about 6 million Polish Christians alone. And he wasn't just killing the common people. He was killing the Christian leaders, the bishops, the priests, the monks, and intellectual leaders. So, and he was very determined he was going to eliminate eventually the Slavs. What he had to say about the Slavic people, Russians and so on, was pretty nasty. And he pretty much wiped out the Gypsies, the Romani, as well as
they would
groups.
Have been happy to exterminate Christianity in Europe. I debate atheists, and they'll say, well, Hitler was a Christian, which, if I recall, he banned Christmas. I don't know how many Christians banned Christmas in favor of the winter solstice or whatever.
Well, yeah, I have a whole chapter in my book on Hitler, on his ideas relative to Christianity. He made it very clear he was going to eliminate Christianity. But as he stressed, we have to do one thing at a time. Let's get the Jews. Let's win the war. And then we can work on eventually destroying the Christians. Hitler was actually a very, I hate to say, a tactful person, but he realized that you got to be careful because you've got to deal with the people. In fact, so much of the awful things that happened in Nazi Germany, Hitler made sure it was not written down. He was very careful not to record his orders, etc. He would give his orders relative to extermination of the Jews, etc., orally, one-to-one, to make sure that this didn't go back to him. And when people complained about this, he said, well, I didn't do that. This is somebody else. So he was one must admit he was a very good politician.
Well, reading Mein Kampf, I was astounded the extent to which it was not based on promoting his principles, but tactical considerations.
Yeah.
Like, how do you get a lot of people out to a party meeting on a Thursday night? So very tactical, very strategic minded, and very wicked.
Yeah,
true. And immersed in a Darwinian worldview. So we've mentioned the Tasmanians. If Darwinism is a universal acid, how about other aspects? Economics, sexuality.
One of the main ones is morality. The Darwinian worldview basically says the key to the future is being able to survive long enough to have lots of kids and to having lots of kids or lots of offspring. So reproduction. So he felt that natural selection would select men who had a high sex drive, men who were aggressive sexually. So he felt that Darwin, in his works as well as his followers, basically stressed that evolution would select for men who had a high sex drive, number one. Number two, therefore, this meant not just being very romantic and persuasive, but rape. Rape is a natural outcome of natural selection. Now, they weren't
Animals don't always get consent, right? Male dolphins practically gang rape female dolphins. So if we're just animals, sometimes I get that argument from homosexual activists. They say, well, animals behave like this. And I say, well, if you're saying that you're an animal, you're behaving like an animal, that's sort of hard to argue with.
Yeah.
But animals will kill their own young and eat their young. So if it's survival of the fittest, what were you about to say about the concept of rape in a Darwinian worldview? I interrupted you.
Well, if you understand what Darwinism had to say, you can see it's very logical that, again, those who have a larger number of offspring, more offspring, therefore that gene pool would get larger. Men who were not very sexually aggressive at all would have fewer children. Therefore, those genes would eventually be wiped out. So the key is to increase the population. To do that, again, we have two things, natural selection, which means basically you being able to survive and number of offspring. So if you survive to be 90 and don't have any offspring, that's the end of your genes. So the key is you need to increase the gene pool of those who are more fit. Those who are more fit are those who are more aggressive. This is often the justification that Darwinists use for men who are promiscuous. That, of course, they would be promiscuous because natural selection selects for promiscuity.
Sure. And so the biblical model of a lifelong commitment between one man and one woman, if you're married and either spouse, but let's say your wife is not able to conceive, and then if you're a good Darwinist, it's like your whole life is a failure.
Yeah.
So you have to go out and get other women to reproduce because Darwinism is only about reproduction.
Right.
That's it. Darwinism is reproduction.
And leaving offspring.
Survival of the fittest. That's how a species advances because it's survival of the fittest. And so whether you seduce other women or take them, were there ever any proponents of Darwinism who wrote along these lines?
Oh, many, many. Best example is Richard Dawkins, and he, very creative. Of course, he's a good writer, so one has to acknowledge that. But he basically says, now look at wine. We don't have one wine that we favor. We have many types of wine that we favor. What's wrong with not liking just this type of wine, but another type of wine? What's wrong with liking vodka? With cars, the same thing. We may love a Jeep. Where I live, they build Jeeps. We may love a Jeep. But on the other hand, what's wrong with also loving other cars, other kinds of cars?
So you might love multiple women.
Same thing with women. Why do we have to love only one woman?
Maybe he loves his own daughter. If there are no rules, then there are no rules other than reproduction.
Mm-hmm. But he openly advocates. He said, this is normal. This is sane. Openly advocates promiscuity among men, and he says the reason we are not as promiscuous as evolution says we should be is because of religion. Religion, Christianity in particular, inhibits, opposes our natural inclination. And when I read that, my thought is, I wonder if his wife, Dawkins' wife, Richard Dawkins' wife, has read this, and I wonder what she thinks about this.
You know, we have video of Richard Dawkins saying recently that infanticide should be legal, like if the baby is handicapped or ill. Infanticide should be legal in the first, maybe the first year or so, that if the parents want to kill the child, forget about abortion, that's old school. It should be legal to kill the baby after the baby's born. You've written about this. This is a huge problem.
18 months is the number often given. And there are many. Dr. Singer, who's at, I think he's at
Princeton.
Harvard University. He's at Princeton, you're right. Peter Singer, he very open about this, that a healthy dog is worth much more than an unhealthy baby. And what he stresses is all we're doing is helping evolution along. All we're doing is instead of letting natural selection take care of these unfit humans, we're just simply facilitating what natural selection would normally do. And therefore, he openly advocates this. And of course, he's gotten a lot of heat for this. But on the other hand, he really sincerely believes this. And critics have noted that this is exactly what Hitler was trying to do. Ironically, Singer himself, his parents, his grandparents were Jews and were killed by the Nazi government. I think they either died in the camps or they were openly executed. And so it'd be ironic that a man is advocating something that wiped out much of his family. And he knows this, but nonetheless, he says, well, that is one aspect of Nazism that I feel is there's no point in saving and raising children who have clear defects. And we should have Singer advocated 18 months to be able to make this determination.
The Journal of Medical Ethics, their article, After Birth Abortion, Why Should the Baby Live?, advocating killing the baby for any reason whatsoever.
Right.
Steven Pinker, I think he's from up the coast from Princeton, maybe he's from MIT, wrote a 3-page article in the New York Times. This is going back a few years. But we have a whole DVD on it, Infanticide in the Pages of the New York Times, where he argued it should be legal to kill babies after they're born for any reason. The New York Times published it.
Yeah.
They promote it on the cover of their Sunday edition. Discover Magazine did this article on the range of infanticide with Sarah Hardy. You've heard of her?
Oh, yeah.
She's on Lemurs, I think. And she said that infanticide is at one end of the spectrum of parental care, because if you kill one baby, you might have more resources to take care of another.
Yeah.
You know, the Right to Life movement, National Right to Life, they've been fighting like 24-hour waiting periods and informed consent. Jerry, they're fighting battles that are absurdly irrelevant. We are fighting the godless who want to kill children. They want to kill the elderly, the infirm, the handicapped. Forget waiting periods. It all comes down to, are we created in God's image and likeness? And does it matter that God said, do not kill the innocent? That's where the battleground is. Yeah. It's not on waiting periods.
And an example that they use to defend that is that a significant number of Down syndrome children, or trisomy 21 is what it's technically called, are born. And you don't know this until after the child is born. So therefore, they're arguing we need to be able to make these decisions, maybe not 18 months, but maybe 3 months or maybe 6 months or maybe a week. But these decisions need to be made earlier in the child's development.
Yeah.
And we should not be burdened with people who have Down syndrome. On the other hand, I used to work in a home for retarded children. And that's what we called it back then, I should state. And the Down syndrome children were among the nicest kids you'll ever meet. And I've talked to parents, and they say that indeed we are really blessed by having this child with Down syndrome. Yeah. Another example is Williams syndrome. Sometimes they are the most blessed of all the children, even though they're severely handicapped, of course, have to be taken care of by the parents with well beyond the age of 18 or 21. Mm. But when we make these judgments, there's a problem. Although a significant number of Down syndrome children are aborted before
maybe a majority in the West.
Yeah.
We have a cousin with a son with Down syndrome, a beautiful young kid in Florida. So, yeah, these kids are killed because they're not designer genes babies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Darwinism. But with rape, would I be correct in, you mentioned Dawkins advocating promiscuity. I don't recall a Darwinist proponent who has said anything positive about rape.
Yeah, they obviously don't. They would have a storm of the women's community and the men's community, too, down their throats.
Right.
So, but they say we can understand why it occurs. There's a good Darwinian reason.
Oh, the Darwinian explanation for everything, right? It's sort of like they used to have the Marxist explanation for everything.
Yeah.
So the Darwinian explanation for rape, just like for war and so on, in a way, they justify those behaviors.
In a way, they do. And they aren't saying, well, yeah, you ought to go out and rape somebody, but they can say we can see from a scientific viewpoint why this behavior occurs, why it's very common.
In Discover magazine, that's exactly what Sarah Hardy's article was about. We can understand via evolution that this is something that was inbred into these creatures because their genes are telling them if they kill their offspring, they're going to have a better life. Mm-hmm. And so they do it. They were taught to do it. And in fact, these articles then will make the connection to women who kill their babies or to men who kill their babies after they're born. So these are justifications in a sense.
Or people use them as justifications. When I worked for the court, I was intrigued with some of these issues. And a number tried to justify behavior like rape, and they say, well, it was just programmed into me because of natural selection. The court didn't buy it, as you may imagine.
Wasn't that Leopold and Loeb? Do you remember that case in Chicago with the Scopes trial? Who was the attorney with the ACLU?
Clarence Darrow.
And he had defended Leopold and Loeb for this brutal murder. And his defense was, this is Darwinism. They evolved to do this. This is in their very genes. Mm-hmm. So it is a justification.
Clarence Darrow, used that. And it was successful because they would have gotten the death penalty, but he managed to get life in prison instead of the death penalty.
Right, exactly. And by the way, mention the Scopes trial. Do you recall the biology text that was at the center of that case? It was written by a guy named Hunter. You remember Biology?
Civic Biology, yeah. I have a copy.
In it, you do? Oh, yeah. Well. In that book, we only have a minute, but in that book, he presented Jews and blacks and others as closer to apes than white Europeans.
Yeah, that's one of the most racist biology textbooks that I've encountered.
And think of the title, Civic Biology. In other words, we need to implement in public policy the fact that we know that Jews and blacks are inferior. They're close to apes.
Eugenics.
It's like the Tasmanians.
Yeah.
And so here you have Christians who are saying, look, this is teaching that humans are like animals. This is evil. And our culture today hates the creationists and loves the ACLU.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
It's ironic.
Jerry, thank you for your talk on May 9th here in Denver on the Universal Acid. We're out of time, Of course, our website links to your materials. We have 10 seconds. Do you have one thing you'd like to mention, one book or paper?
Well, by far the most successful book that I published is Hitler and the Nazi Darwinian Worldview.
Yes, and we will link to that at Amazon, which is the best place to get it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Jerry Bergman. What an honor to speak with you again.
Thank you much.
You're welcome. RealScienceRadio.com.